It's the Garden Nerd Tip of the Week podcast, where we spend time chatting with expert gardening guests and we ask for their favorite tip. I'm Christy Wilhelmi. Thanks for joining me. My guest today is Jared Gettle, co-author of The Heirloom Life Gardener and the Baker Creek Vegan Cookbook. Jared started Baker Creek Heirloom Seed Company at age 17, which now offers over 1,800 varieties of seeds and distributes over 700,000 catalogs each year. Together, he and his wife, Emily, live in Missouri with their four children. Jer, welcome to the podcast.
Good to be here. Really appreciate you having me on, Christy. Always fun to get a chance to talk with you.
Thank you. Well, we know each other, you know, from our brief moments at the Heirloom Expo, which is the Pure Food Festival put on by Baker Creek each year in Santa Rosa, California. And you're usually running around like crazy during that event. So I'm really glad that we have this time to talk in a little quieter setting on Skype.
Definitely a little quieter today for me, that's for sure. So.
Yeah, I guess the spring is right around the corner, so you must be getting busy where you are.
Yeah, definitely busy. It's busy as the shipping season is busy for us all winter, but the local gardening scene is starting to come alive. Everybody's getting their plants started and getting anxious, you know, starting to get a few early things out. People are putting their peas in, a few people are starting to put potatoes in and stuff like that.
Oh, good. So you're not covered in snow.
No, yeah, we've had a few brief bits of snow, and I think we may have a little bit of more snow this weekend, but snow usually only lasts here at the most, in general, 1 or 2 days at a time, and, you know, anywhere from 1 or 2 times a year to 3 or 4, maybe 5, 6 times a year.
Okay, so it's not too bad. Well, that's nice to hear. So for those who have not heard, I think maybe the two people on the planet who haven't heard about Baker Creek Heirloom Seed Company before, can you sum up the company's mission for our audience?
Our mission is basically to save and preserve the old varieties of seeds, whether it's a pink celery from China or a speckled Native American corn or the Seminole pumpkin from Florida, you know, whatever it may be, these traditional varieties that come from different people groups, the fish pepper from, you know, Baltimore. All these different varieties have histories and stories and recipes and cultures that connect to all sorts of the different communities in America, from Amish to Mennonite to, you know, again, Native American or African American or Danish settlers and so forth. Every group, people group, is somehow connected with the varieties that they grew. So that's what makes them fun. It connects cultures and people and places and keeps the stories alive, and that's what we're trying to do with these seeds.
Yes, and I noticed that the catalog, which I call garden porn, by the way, because every photo is beautiful and makes you want to grow something you've never heard of before. There's always a story that accompanies, if you have it, you know, the story of the background of where that seed came from, and even sometimes how it came to you. Can you remember the first seeds that sparked Baker Creek for you?
Well, I think I first got interested in gardening and, you know, starting a seed company when I was like 3 or 4 years old, gardening with my folks and my grandparents. The first things I planted were yellow pear tomatoes, which is a really old heirloom variety, and then the Binning's Green Tent scallop squash, which is moderately old. It was actually an improved version of the white scallop squash. But both of them are, you know, old heirloom varieties that are really unique and really cool and still delicious to this day. I still love it, particularly growing the green scallop squash. But those kind of started my interest, and from there I just started, you know, trying to grow any seed I could find or that my folks or grandparents could find or aunts or uncles. So kind of grew up in a gardening community and wanted to, you know, keep these old seeds alive even from, you know, even when I was really small, I noticed them starting to disappear from seed catalogs. I was basically born when a lot was changing in the, you know, gardening scene.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about that. So you saw the writing on the wall long before the rest of us did, and that inspired you to start saving and selling seeds, right?
Definitely, and I always wanted to work for, you know, as a small child, I always wanted to work for a seed company. I didn't know if I would start a seed company or go to work for a seed company, but somehow I wanted to work with seeds and packaging and selling and marketing. It all kind of worked together as what I wanted to do, you know, even when I was really small. It's still one of my favorite things to do is visit old seed companies and old sites of old seed companies where seed companies were. When we take trips, we're always stopping by maybe the old Gurney's headquarters or so forth and so forth.
Yeah, you know, and I know that sometimes you've been sent seeds from people in war-torn countries. Do you have any examples of things you're getting from people from across the sea?
Yeah, definitely in the Middle East, we've been sent different seeds. From Iraq, we were sent like the Alibaba watermelon and several, a good number of different varieties back around the year 1999 and year 2000. And then again, the same gentleman sent us a few more, I think in like 2004 or 2005 after the war had been going a couple of years. And were sending me different things and saying, these things are dying out in my country, both due to modern agriculture and, you know, the war coming in. And then the same thing happened in Syria right before the war, actually. A lady started sending me different seeds from Syria, different heirloom seeds, and said she'd always been interested in the old varieties of Syria. And her husband was actually on a business trip to the U.S. This was probably, I don't know, maybe 8 or 9 years ago now, and found some of our seeds in the U.S. and took her a catalog back, and she was totally enamored and wanted to share some of their local varieties. And now for the last number of years, she's not been able to garden or farm at all because of the situation there. So we try to keep these old varieties going for various different reasons, whether it's just people losing interest or war or whatever, drought or whatever might be the case in each individual area.
Yeah, it's a noble cause, and I'm glad you're doing it. There's so much diversity that's being lost to modern agriculture and larger seed companies buying up smaller seed companies. So Baker Creek is really a beacon in the middle of all of that. Let me ask you this, because you mentioned that this woman from Syria got your seed catalog. I read in Emily's bio, your wife, that she met you through the Baker Creek seed catalog. How did that happen?
I think some friends of theirs, her family's actually had a catalog at their house in Tennessee, and when they were there, they showed her the catalog, and they requested the catalog and ordered seeds, I think, one time or so, and then they came to the seed store, and that's where her family came to the seed store, and that's where I initially met her.
Oh, that's sweet. I love that a seed catalog can bring two people together.
But no, yeah, lots of different connections over the years through the seed catalog. Lots of different, from the festivals, we've met lots of different friends and different, you know, friends that met friends and so forth. Lots of connections over the years. It's kind of cool to see how things develop, and you meet people that you haven't seen in a long time and find out, you know, that they married somebody that they met at a festival or just, you know, made a business connection or, you know, it's, then that's the thing about gardening and, you know, farmers markets and all these different old traditional ways of, you know, basically growing our food and producing our food. They really connect people more with each other and also their food. So people actually, it isn't just like going to a big, you know, shopping store and throwing in some stuff and going through the self-checkout and going home. You know, you actually are connecting with people that are growing your food, whether it's seeds or food or, you know, however you do it. That's, you're much more connected if you're shopping from, you know, direct with the consumers and direct with the people that produce the food.
Right. I love farmers markets for that. And everybody eats. So it's definitely, food is the way that we connect. I've read that you and Emily homeschool your kids and run Baker Creek. And then Emily has a side business called Home Folk. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Well, she started out selling different, like natural products and different clothing and stuff here at the seed store. And also we have a couple other little shops on the place here. And over the course of the next few years, she started just putting stuff on her website. So I guess it kind of started from that. So
that's nice. And she's specializing in some fair trade clothing and items that can be used during homeschooling and that kind of stuff. So I like that. I like that a lot. Another seed question for you. I know that Joseph Simcox travels around the world finding new seeds for Baker Creek, but last year you set out yourselves. Where did you go and what did you bring back?
Well, in the last couple of years, we've been to Mexico and Japan and China, but all three countries were super interesting. But we were in Japan about a year and a half ago now, and we brought back a huge amount of different Japanese varieties, which are really cool. A lot of them are really high quality. And then later on, I guess, just over a year ago, we went to China. Actually, we adopted two children from China. And, of course, when we were there, we brought back some interesting varieties with us. We got some samples and really cool stuff. But, you know, the biggest reason we were going was to get the kids, and we've got two wonderful children when we were there. And, of course, you know, I can't – wherever I'm at, I'm always picking up seed packets or a handful of seeds here or there. So it's always – wherever we go.
That's nice. When I want to talk to you about your two new kids, I was able to shake the hand of your newest girl. I can't remember her name, but she seemed like she was really excited to be here.
No, yeah, they've really gained a lot in the last year as far as English skills and being able to adapt to the U.S. It's really exciting to see how how they've been able to adapt and change, but yet keep a lot of their same. It's interesting how cultures intermingle and learn and trade ideas and so forth and so forth. And we're looking forward to taking them back to China too in the near future. So.
Oh, that's good. So for those of us who are terrified to bring seeds into the country, because I've smuggled a few packs of seeds in from across the pond, and I was afraid I was going to get caught or something. I don't know. I just don't know the process. Can you share what that's like to bring seeds from another country into the U.S.?
Well, it all depends on where it's coming from and how it's packaged. But in general, there's a couple different ways you can go about it. One is requesting a small seed packet permit, and you can bring some things back with you if you get the permit ahead of time. The other thing would be is to get a phytosanitary certificate in the country and then have it shipped back. A lot of people, the easiest way is just to find like a local seed company or somebody to do the paperwork for you. But then again, on the other hand, a lot of people don't have the time or, have the know-how don't want to pay the expense to have it done. And a lot of people just put a seed packet in their luggage and bring it back as well. So.
Right. I confess, I've wrapped up seed packets in wrapping paper as if it were someone giving me a gift. And then I've put it in my luggage so that if I got caught, I would be like, oh, I don't know what it is. So it's probably the wrong way to do that.
Yeah, it's probably the easiest way is actually the easiest way with it's questionable legality, but is mailing them back. Seeds that are mailed into the U.S., normally aren't held up by customs and come right in.
Okay, well, that's good to know.
But
we don't know whether that's an offense or not.
Yeah, I'm sure it's, I don't know. It depends on, seeds are mailed into this country every day, thousands of packages of them. There's a lot of seed companies and dealers that ship seeds into the U.S. And in general, the U.S. kind of looks the other way with seed packages coming to the U.S. as long as they're clean and especially if they're packaged seed.
Right. But if they're in like a Ziploc bag or something, then
it might be more questionable. But, I don't know.
Yeah.
Anyway, that's the most common way, seeds are coming into this country right now is people selling them on Alibaba.com or eBay or wherever and mailing them. And the same way they're going into most countries.
Right. You mentioned that your first seeds that enthralled you were the cherry, the yellow pear tomato, and the Bennings green tip patty pan squash, both of which are one of, two of my favorites to grow. Do you have any new favorites that you've discovered that you're really excited to share in the catalog?
Probably the most exciting new thing we have this year is definitely our customer's favorite, and I think it's mine as well, is there's several, but I think our overall most popular thing this year is the Chinese pink celery. It's a quick-producing, heat-tolerant celery that makes a smaller celery plant. It's still a good size, probably about 12 to 14 inches tall, but really bright, vibrant bubblegum pink stem, so it's amazing. People are amazed by it. We have a bunch of it growing right now in the greenhouse, actually. And it has a great flavor. It's sweet. It's great for fresh snacking or soups or salads. That's
nice.
One of the really fun things that we brought back from China. But then there's so many other things. Like we have the Kaho watermelon from Japan, which is relatively new. It's a 2 or 3 pound melon with salmon orange flesh. So it's this beautiful salmon orange color. And it has a gray rind, perfect for, one or two people and just delicious. Super good tasting. It was originally from China, actually, but has been grown in Japan for the last 100 and some years.
That sounds delicious. And I think before we started recording, you mentioned something about the orange-fleshed watermelons that were early on in your discoveries or things that you like to sell on the website and in the catalog as well. Do you have any favorites of those that you like to share?
Oh, probably the Orange Glow watermelon, which was one that was introduced by Wilhite Seed Company back in the 1960s and has disappeared out of most seed catalogs. And it's just a delicious, early-producing, standard-sized watermelon. But our customers and us just love it because the flesh is so sweet and so citrusy. It has an amazing orange-like taste to it and such a deep, deep orange color to it. But it is, it's not a good shipper, it's not a good keeper, but it's just amazing if you get a ripe one right out of the garden.
That's the beauty of being able to grow your own, because it doesn't have to travel. It can be eaten right away, you know, 100 steps from your front door or whatever. And so many types of heirlooms don't travel well, so that's the beauty of homegrown, you know, from heirloom seeds in your own backyard.
Definitely, yeah, it's definitely, you can grow things like the Japanese strawberries we're having ripen right now in our greenhouse. They taste like giant wild strawberries. The flavor's amazing, but they're super soft, so you can never ship them. I mean, they just, you know, they're so fragile you can barely get them to the house, but the flavor is amazing, and their size is, you know, like, not as big as a store-bought strawberry, but, you know, like a conventional, traditional strawberry. Probably about a half ounce to an ounce a piece, and amazing flavor, which you just can't get in a store-bought strawberry anymore. Even, you know, even in ones at farmers markets are usually, you know, nothing like these.
I'm going to have to check those out. I'm writing down everything that you're saying, by the way.
All right.
So it is tip time. Do you have a favorite tip that you'd like to share with the Garden Nerd audience?
Probably the thing, you know, and this is just a small tip, but the thing I would like to share with everybody is, when you're in a new climate or a new area, wherever you're at, or even in the same climate, be a little bit adventurous and try things. Try varieties, new varieties. Try things from other climates also that are similar to what your climate is. So say if you're in, like we're in the Midwest, or say you're in California, look for things from desert climates, especially in situations where your water shortages might be an issue. Look for things that come from other parts of the U.S. that have a desert climate, or look for things from like the Middle East, things that are already a desert climate. Here in Missouri, for example, we need to look for things that are from tropical climates, because our summers are very tropical.
Oh, really?
And we need to, we have a lot of disease issues because of the, you know, wet, warm, you know, 80s and 90s and tons of rain, you know, on and off through our summers. And it's not continuous, but on and off through the summers. So people get so into growing, okay, all I want to grow is, you know, this tomato and this kind of pepper and this kind of corn, and that's it. But oftentimes we failed with the kind of things that we grew up with. You know, I grew up in Idaho and Oregon and moved here, and a lot of those things, you know, you grew up with as a kid don't do well here in Missouri. And the same in every country and every climate, you know, you just need to try stuff, and don't be afraid to plant just a few of each of a bunch of different things the first year or so. You'll be much more successful than trying to just go grab your package of what you're familiar with and put it in. Trialing stuff, both, you know, for us as a company, but also for home gardeners. Home gardeners want us, you know, to tell them exactly what's going to do well in their climate, but oftentimes, you know, it's just a guess until you actually try it. We don't know every insect out there. We don't know what pests are going to bother your crop. We do know which things are more resistant, but the best thing you can do is trial things. And then you also got to decide what you actually like to eat. Some people don't like black carrots, and some people, you know, prefer them to orange carrots. So the only way to try it is to actually trial them yourself, find out, or go to a farmer's market and see what you like taste-wise.
Right.
But the more diversity, we've been more and more successful, the more diversity we get into the garden. And that includes, you know, pollinator plants, unusual plants. Don't be afraid to take cuttings from, you know, your local neighborhood, or get a sweet potato from the store and try to sprout it. You know, there's lots of different ways, you know, to save a few seeds here and a few seeds there, and try a bunch of different things wherever you're at. Grab a few seeds from fruits from a farmer's market and give different things a try. Because, you know, even here in Missouri, for example, we grow bananas outside in the garden. We don't actually get ripe fruit, but they're still beautiful plants. And we do get green papayas for like green papaya salad, even outdoors here if they're started early. So there's a lot of things like that that people just never realized, you know, oh, I didn't realize we could grow green papayas for Thai green papaya salad, for example, in Missouri.
So yeah, I was going to ask about that, because you mentioned that you have a tropical climate, and the Baker Creek seed catalog offers the pink bananas, and I thought, oh, do you grow those there?
They actually grow here in one season. If you start the plants relatively early, and they'll produce beautiful, they're mostly just ornamental, but they'll produce beautiful ornamental pink bananas and beautiful flowers just in a single season. So a lot of stuff people just don't think they can produce, you know, in their climate, or they think it's too hot or too cold. But again, like the celery I was mentioning a little earlier, hardly anybody, you know, grows much celery here in Missouri, because it's really hard to get good celery. But the Asian celeries, the pink celery and the white celery, they do amazing compared to the standard old green celeries that are, you know, common. The European celeries that were developed in England or, you know, Holland or wherever they might come from, they don't do near as well as the ones that were developed in China, which has a much more similar climate to most of the U.S.
Okay, well, that's good to know. I know that for myself, as a coastal Los Angeles gardener in coastal California, I find that if I pick tomato varieties that are from the Russian mountains, you know, mountain areas or Russian areas, and, you know, all of the old Eastern Bloc countries like Azoichka and, well, there's just a lot of them that are meant for coastal areas that do well in colder climates. And that, so what you're saying is absolutely true. You just have to try it until you see what works best for you.
Yeah, definitely. You need to look for things from, if you're in a zone with cooler climates, look for things from northern zones or coastal zones, and also smaller varieties. Like, instead of trying to grow, if you're in the north or on the coast and don't get a lot of summer heat, go for the smallest watermelons and the smallest cantaloupe. Don't try to grow the big ones, you know, to start out with anyway.
Right.
Start out with the smaller varieties. Look for the small early things. Go for watermelons developed in Alaska or Siberia or Canada, and you'll probably have much better luck than trying to grow ones from Georgia if you're in a, you know, coastal zone or if you're in Minnesota.
That's great. These are all great tips, JR. Thank you so much for being on the Garden Nerd podcast.
Really appreciate it.
How do people find you?
People can find us at our website, rareseeds.com. That's rareseeds.com. Or, you know, search us out on Facebook as well. We have a lot of stuff on Facebook and Instagram. And, of course, if they're in Missouri, stop by our store here in Mansfield, Missouri, or our store in California, in Petaluma, California. So we always love to meet people face-to-face.
Excellent. All right, Garden Nerds, you'll find links to Baker Creek's website and Home Folk on gardennerd.com this week. We'll also post a link to their social media channels and their Facebook page. That's it for this week. Subscribe to this podcast on iTunes or wherever you listen. Visit us for tons of gardening information on gardennerd.com. You'll find us on Instagram and Twitter under GardenNerd1, on Facebook as gardennerd.com, and of course, our Garden Nerd YouTube channel. And if you want to support us, feel free to become a Patreon subscriber. Happy gardening!